Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie
on News Talk.
Now, whatever your health queries, questions, send them in to us. The WhatsApp number is 087 1400 106 because Dr. Nina Burns, who's a GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic, is with me to answer them. Nina, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Good afternoon. I'm good, thanks.
Now, listener says that they have an underactive, they're on underactive thyroid medication. Can it be taken last thing at night if their stomach is empty? Altroxin is the medication prescribed.
Yeah, in fact, I generally suggest to people that they take it last thing at night because they say it's absorbed better if you don't eat kind of after it. So I always think nighttime is a good time to take it rather than kind of in the morning and then having to hold off before you eat. And I think I worked in the US and in general over there, they recommend taking it at night. So it's sort of the way I recommend it.
Anyway, yeah. So that listener's doing the right thing. This texter, Nina, is 54, male, generally in good health. His wife had COVID in mid-December. He's tested negative in December, January and again last week. But he does have a bad cough, has had one at the end, just after his wife had COVID, and he still has it. He says when he gets a fit of coughing, it's like my throat closes. I find it really difficult to catch my breath. The cough has always felt like it's sort of there's a liquid gunk in my throat. And now as I've lost my sense of taste and smell, it sort of changed colour to a yellowish kind of colour as well. He's talking about whatever's coming up out of his throat. Advice.
So it sounds like he's had this cough since December, I think, his wife had COVID. Is that right?
After his wife, it seems to have had COVID, he's had this. So he's had it for a while.
I mean, there's so many things going around, but obviously we would say to anyone, if you have a cough that's lasting longer than a month, you need to go see your doctor. So you need to be examined, needs to be checked. There are some weird, various viruses out there that the COVID test is kind of helpful if it's positive. If it's negative, it doesn't really tell us too much, but a lot of viruses we manage the same way. If he's bringing up very green sputum, he might need an antibiotic at this stage. And some people do get a bacterial infection in on the top, on the back of a virus. But I suppose the important message there, if you have a cough that's not going away after 4 weeks, you need to go to your doctor.
Okay. This listener says that they have a pain. How may I have a pain-free investigation carried out by an ENT specialist? I suffer from a runny nose, itchy eyelids. It's been suggested to have a full examination done with an eye, ear and nose specialist. I dread having anything like tubes, needles, stuff like that stuck up my nose. I'm wondering, can I get a local anaesthetic first or what are your suggestions?
So I suppose it's always important to talk to the doctors looking after you about your fear of pain, because, no one wants anyone to be in pain and it's not necessary to suffer pain. What I would say to you is that when you go to see your ear, nose and throat doctor, while they do often use that little tube that they pass up the nose, it's not actually a painful test and they can spray a local anaesthetic ahead. It's more uncomfortable. It's just a feeling of the tube in your nose, but it shouldn't be painful anyway. But don't be afraid to tell the doctor that you're afraid it'll be painful. That yes, they can absolutely put like a local anaesthetic gel or a spray up your nose that can help with that. But certainly don't put off getting investigations that have been suggested. Don't put off getting them done just because you're afraid of what the pain might be, because obviously the investigations are important if they've been suggested.
Okay. Listeners wondering if we can ask you if it's really healthy to eat potato skins or can they cause digestive problems?
God. I don't know if we had that lesson in medical school. I mean, potato skins, obviously the skin of a potato, as far as I know, and probably a dietitian would be better at this, is very high in B vitamins, I think. And that's why they say, the skin is healthy. But, people with IBS can be sensitive to different foods. So there are lots of ways of getting those vitamins. I would say to anyone, if there's a food you eat that makes you feel unwell or upsets your system, then obviously that food doesn't suit you and different foods don't suit different people.
Texter Nina says, my white cell count is so low at 3.6. I'm 67. I'm fit. I'm a healthy lady. My husband's is also low. Could that be our diet or what could we do to try and improve it?
So I'm assuming they mean their total white cell count, that you have your white cells and there's a breakdown of different white cells. So you'd need the breakdown to understand where that's going. Sometimes the total can be a little bit low and the breakdown is normal. Viruses can drop your white cell count briefly. We see a lot of people after COVID, their white cells count dip and then they come back. So what we do is if we see one low, then we follow up. What I'd often say is some kind of petite, slim women, we'd often see a slightly low white cell count. We always do various tests to make sure there's no other reason for it, but sometimes it can be okay. So again, I would say go to your doctor. Things like low B vitamins, low folate, low B12, there are certain vitamins that are involved in the formation of white cells that can cause it to drop low. So you kind of need this evaluated more. Talk to your doctor. It may be what's normal for you, but obviously you always rule out that there's anything else going on there.
Okay. Is there any way that I can get over-the-counter either prescription or anything that I might require for high cortisol levels, asks this listener.
So I guess I'm wondering how the high cortisol levels were diagnosed. It's not a blood test that we routinely do in people. And I think when you kind of look on social media and Google, you might find a lot of things that people are suggesting you've high cortisol. But medically, as doctors, we pretty much never check people's cortisol. Like, low cortisol is a rare condition called Addison's, which has different symptoms. Cortisol does go up in stress. It's a stress response. So obviously we always talk to people about managing stress. But I just wondered, does this person have actual high cortisol or do they think they do because they've looked up stuff on social media that suggests they do? And what I would suggest is that you talk to your doctor.
So it is a specific blood test that's required to diagnose high cortisol levels.
Yeah, but cortisol, when you're checking it, has to be checked under very, very specific conditions. So like you have to kind of be in bed, not moving, very first thing in the morning. Like, we call them a midnight and 8 a.m. cortisol, and they're usually done in hospital in very specific conditions. Sometimes they give you something the night before that kind of stimulates your adrenal glands to see if they're working. So like, if you're going to some random place and they're offering you a cortisol blood test at any time of the day, they're not off giving you good advice. So it's not a blood test that should be routinely done.
Another texter says that their own recent blood test showed a slight rise in creatine. I'm wondering what I can do to improve it.
So creatinine is one of your kidney numbers. So that's a change in your kidney test. So that is important to follow that up. There are a number of causes. A simple one that's not anything abnormal is if you have someone with a large muscle bulk. So sometimes you see this in sort of men particularly who build a lot of muscle, who do a lot of gym workout. They might have a slightly raised creatinine, but it can also be a sign of kidney disease. So there are other tests we can do. We can send urine off to check for protein in it and stuff like that. So it is important to follow up.
Now, this texter says they've got small marks on their back and arm. They seem to be a constant, there seems to be like a little constant half curbed scab, dark in colour. I'm wondering if you can give me advice.
Yeah, I would say to anyone, if you have a skin lesion that's scabbing or not getting better, you need to go to your doctor. You'd probably be referred to a dermatologist to have that checked.
Yeah, so no question that needs a GP visit. Yeah. Listener's 14-year-old daughter has been experiencing nosebleeds on and off since she was 7 or 8. Not as heavy or as frequent as they used to be. So she is still to have her period also. I'm wondering, is this normal or should she go to the doctor?
So I guess it's never normal to have frequent nosebleeds, but it also doesn't mean that there's something seriously wrong. In a young person, the most common cause would be nasal irritation. That can be as simply as picking your nose, blowing your nose, having a cold, or there's an area just inside the nose where the blood vessels are really, really near the surface and they get irritated very easily and it can bleed. But obviously, go to your GP, they can look in. If it's very mild, we can use a cream that often helps heal that area. But if you're getting recurrent nosebleeds, then sometimes they send you on and they do a thing called cauterizing it. So again, go along. She needs an examination. But if she's a habit like picking her nose or blowing her nose a lot or using things that might dry the nose, some of the sprays we use for allergies can dry the nose. Those kind of things can also cause it.
This listener says her sister had got the flu injection recently. Since then, her arm has been very sore. She's gone to the physio, who reckons that it possibly wasn't administered correctly and might have hit a nerve or muscle. Any advice, and is it common?
So when you give anyone an injection, when you pass a needle through the skin, there's always a small risk of hitting off a nerve or a blood vessel because, you know, we have no major vessels superficially, but you have blood vessels right under the skin, which is why we bleed sometimes. And the reason we feel in our skin is we've nerve fibers there. So sometimes it's a case of it just being irritated. Some people are sore for a while after an injection, and the majority of people, it settles down. Another thing sometimes is the vaccine, when it goes in, can kind of pool in the muscle and it can be a little bit sore. It can pool in the skin if it wasn't quite into the muscle, and it can be sore for a while. So actually using the arm, encouraging the blood flow to the arm, encourages it to absorb. Obviously, if you have it going on a long time, go see your doctor. Don't automatically put it down to that vaccine if you've a sore area in your shoulder that's not getting better, because it really shouldn't. Even if it was local irritation to a nerve or blood vessel, that's not pain that should go on indefinitely.
Okay. I'm 58, very active. I've recently been diagnosed with osteoporosis. I've been on HRT and had an ovary removed in my 40s. I'd appreciate if your medical expert might advise on what perhaps might be an appropriate treatment for my situation.
So really, there are a number of factors that will help decide which one you should use. The one we commonly start with is one called alendronate, which is a once weekly tablet. And usually you take that for up to 5 years and then you take a break. And then if you need further treatment, then you would go on to an injectable one called denosumab that you get twice a year. there's a small percentage of people can't take the tablet for various reasons, and then you would go straight to the injection. But again, it's important that you go to your doctor, who would have your full history, know all the medication you're on, know any other issues you might have, and they can guide you as to which is best for you.
She says, whether is it Prolia or Fosamax, whether they might be a more appropriate treatment for my situation.
Yes, so Prolia and Fosamax are the trade names for those two drugs. Okay. So alendronate is Fosamax and Prolia is denosumab. So alendronate being the one we usually go for first, unless there's a specific reason you can't go for the other one.
And finally, I'm a female, early 50s, have a low heart rate of 49. I'm quite fit. I eat well, but the low heart rate and low blood pressure make me quite tired. Any advice, please?
So I guess someone who's aerobically fit might have a naturally low heart rate, low blood pressure, because if you have good cardiovascular fitness, you tend to have a lower heart rate. And there are some other conditions that can cause people to have low blood pressure. So again, go along to your doctor. They'll check things out. Weirdly, I know we always tell people to avoid salt, but in some people who naturally have low blood pressure, we encourage them to have salt in their diet to help bring it up. But again, go talk to your doctor, let them check out your heart, make sure there's no unusual reason it's low, and then they can give you advice about that.
Brilliant. Dr. Nina Burns, GP at Generation Health Medical Clinic. Thanks a million, Nina, for joining us here on Lunchtime Live. You can get Nina on X at Dr. Nina Burns, or the website is generationhealth.ie.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan
with insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.